Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 526, Ad Astra Per Aspera.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And it's Season 2, Episode 2 of Strange New Worlds.
Yep. We have done it again.
Have
it's
we?
Another episode.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's an accomplishment of sorts.
This is the celebratory, we have done it again.
Now, we have covered 900-some episodes and stories like movies and shorts and so forth of Star Trek. And I could say in all that time, you and I maybe have never so completely disagreed on a thing as we do on this one. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was shocked.
Me too.
Like, I knew you didn't like this one going in, but I was like, well, this time, you know, maybe he'll, like, see what I'm talking about this time, and, you know.
The thing is, I do, and we'll get into that, but I don't want to criticize it too hard, because if it spoke to you and if it did something for you, like, it worked, and one, you're my friend and I'm glad, but two, that means they were successful as writers and I'm just maybe not the target audience, and that's okay.
Sure.
But I got some real problems with you people, and
you're going to hear about them.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get into it. Well, why don't I kick things off by telling you what happens in Latin title? Here we go. The Enterprise is, well, never mind what the Enterprise is doing, because this week we're following Chris Pike's adventures sitting in a lawyer's office. Don't worry, though, there are plenty of other rooms people will sit in before this episode is over. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. The good captain is here risking life and lung to acquire the perfect defense for Una in her whole lied about being an Illyrian to join Starfleet trial. Now, you may be thinking, who was it who said that the best defense is a good offense? That was Vince Lombardi. Also Mel, the cook from Alice. And sketch comedians / Canadian treasures, the Frantics. Yes, many people have said that the best defense is a good offense, but in this case, the best defense for Una is apparently Neera Catul, an Illyrian civil rights lawyer who hates Starfleet and is mad at Una for abandoning her when they were both small children. Because nothing says hero like someone who carries a grudge from early childhood. Catul initially refuses to help, but Pike's argument finally pushes her to a Harvey Birdman style, I'll take the case. And the good counselor comes out swinging, putting Admiral April on the stand and calling out the many, many times he, like every Starfleet captain, violated the Prime Directive. So laws, says this lawyer, basically mean nothing, and therefore my client is innocent. Weirdly, this approach does not work, which Catul should have guessed because we're only about 20 minutes into the episode at this point. Next, she calls some character witnesses. Spock reminds us of that dumb short trek where he and Number One sang Gilbert and Sullivan in a turbo lift. And Banger reminds us that he's awesome. And La'an reminds us that the Corner Monsters, in case you somehow forgot that for even a second. Like, this episode has absolutely nothing to do with the Gorn, but there she is, saying that thing she says, again. Then Catul calls Una to the stand, and we spend an entire act concealing the data points that will exonerate her within some flowery speeches. I used this exact trick in a courtroom-based Endeavor episode, so I can't really find fault with this approach. Turns out that Pike knew Una was an Illyrian some months ago, but that's not a point against them, but actually a point in favor, because Una was seeking asylum. Somehow this results in Starfleet looking the other way on the genetic modifications business, and Una being allowed to return to work. And from 114 years in the future, Julian Bashir mutters, Cora, I wish I'd thought of that.
114 years later, Julian Bashir does not have to deal with any of this.
He does, though. There's a whole episode about him being kicked out of Starfleet because he's genetically modified.
It feels like that one takes 10 seconds to go, Julian, we're all very disappointed at you. But it's not my fault. Oh. Well, we hadn't thought of that.
That was a full episode. Like, it was 40,
I know, it was a good
minutes.
Episode, too.
Yeah, I know, but it's weird that it feels like we have a precedent-setting case here, and then, no, more than 100 years, we're still doing this.
Well, this is your issue with prequels, as we've discussed many times.
I know, and it's weird that it makes me feel like I'm nitpicking, like, they're the ones who brought it up.
I was on Memory Alpha, and there's actually a bit where they're
Yeah, they do.
They refer to that episode, and Chief O'Brien's like, "There hasn't been a problem with genetically altered people in 114 years," and it was Una Chin Reilly in the Star Trek: The Strange New Worlds episode.
Yep. No, and actually, that's where I got 114 years from. Is they did mention it there, but I just, this issue has come up like later. It's, I don't know. Anyway.
Cool. So I didn't have to go all the way back to Earth for a court case, because there was a war on and we were all very busy.
Also, my parents are highly embarrassing.
Well, we can't kick this guy out of Starfleet. Look at his parents.
Jules. Oh, no.
Jules, you've disappointed us again. But father.
All right. Well, let's get into this. Let's jump into a good thing.
So, this is my absolute favorite episode of Strange New Worlds. Of the ones I've seen, anyway. Like, we've talked about that. I bailed right before the Lower Decks crossover because I didn't want to watch it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to in a few weeks.
Oh, don't remind me. We get to go from this to that.
And then the music.
This is exactly what Star Trek was made for and what it's supposed to be for. Namely, dealing with modern issues in a science fiction setting. So for people who aren't aware, I'm a transgender immigrant who got to read the 1-2 punch this week of Kansas forcing transgender people to turn in their driver's license at the DMV so that they could get new ones reflecting their birth gender, and the Don't Say Trans bill, which effectively bans people from talking about trans issues in schools nationwide. It's rough. I do not need to tell you how bad things are in America right now. And if you think they aren't, you're kind of an asshole, and you shouldn't be listening to this show because you're going to hear a lot of this crap. This episode does what science fiction, and especially Star Trek, is supposed to do. It shows us that as fucking awful as things are now, and they are, and next week they'll probably be even worse, but things can get better. Unjust laws can be overturned. Good people in bad situations can actually win. Tomorrow can actually be better than yesterday. And that is a thing I need to see and hear. I've spoken a lot about on this show about IDIC and how it's important to me. Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. No matter who you are, we have a place for you and it is respected. That is something I believe in, and it's something that Trek should be reflecting. It's something that a lot of modern Trek forgets about. It's something that Enterprise kind of wiped its ass with for the entire 5 or 4 seasons. So, like, it's really important to me that Trek can still show those values. This is an entire court case based around like identity and like your personal, like, it's not framed as religion, but it's framed as tradition. And all of that is important. And I have also talked about on this show how pissed off I am that the Federation still has this one thing that's like, no, we're not doing that. If you do this, we are going to kick you out with extreme prejudice. That makes me so angry. Like, the point of the Federation is that we have a place for everybody, and we will always have a place for everybody. I love this episode for just like pointing out that, yeah, things still aren't perfect, but we can fix that. Like, we can have people acknowledge that that is wrong, and we can try and fix it. Ugh. It's been a rough week, Al.
I hear you, but also you felt this way about this episode when it dropped a couple years ago. So, like,
I did.
Yes, it might be, you know, pulling sharper focus right now, but you've always felt this way about this episode.
That is true. I watched this I had to actually check if I was still in the closet when this came out, and no, it's pretty early in my transition.
I absolutely see why you see yourself.
Yeah, so tell me why you hate it, Al.
Yeah, let me take the transphobe position now. The thing is, this isn't about that. You see yourself in this. I get it.
Yes.
It can be about you, but it's not. Like, one, I think if Star Trek wants to talk about that sort of thing, it's a little cowardly is strong, but if there's a continuum where cowardly is at the far end, it's somewhere on there. Like, if you want to talk about a trans issue, why don't you actually do that instead of saying, no, there's this weird sci-fi thing that's kind of the same if you read between the lines, wink. And I guess, but I you're right that science fiction does that, so that's okay. But Star Trek we've said this together for many years, almost never gets it right.
No, and it absolutely does not.
You think this is an example of them getting it right. I respect that. I don't. But you still have to admit that their record is still pretty.
Oh, no, their record is still bad. That's just like, that's one of the reasons why this one's important to me is like, okay. I feel like you got it this time.
I like
you never get it.
I like a lot of what they tried to do here. I like the idea of a civil rights lawyer in space. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Like in the setting of a multicultural, multi-alien species, like culture sort of thing. But here's where the concept fundamentally breaks down for me. Mm. I know that it's a cultural thing, but it is still, oh boy. It's still a,
yes, go on.
It's a thing they choose to do. You were born the way you are. You didn't say one day, I think I'd like to be a girl. That's not how it worked, right? I don't want to make assumptions. Please correct me.
I mean, it's not that. It's the...
No, but...
I definitely had the thought at some point, I think I'd like to be a girl.
Yeah, but then you realized retroactively you always had been.
Yep.
It's a different... Like, and again, at any point, if I misspeak, cut me off. Like, I don't want to... Like, I'm making some broad assumptions here, and I want you to stop me if I'm getting this wrong. But my understanding is that's how you always have been. And it's about realizing your identity, not making a new identity. You know what I mean? Well,
it's more complicated than that almost. Cause okay. you've still got that, like,
well, you've got 35 years of experience the other way. You can't just throw that away. I get that.
That's the thing too. It's like, when I say to you, it's like, yeah. And then I was a guy for like fucking 35. It's like, I'm not right, but I'm not wrong either. Like,
no, you were socialized that way. And
exactly.
Many things happened to you because you were raised that way and because people saw you a different way. I get that. But this is, okay, if today you and your partner met instead of like 15 years ago, if it was today, would you move to America?
Oh, fuck no.
Okay. That's my fundamental problem with this episode. Mm-hmm. The Illyrians, who are, it is widely known, like genetic engineering is part of their whole thing, chose to join the Federation despite knowing that the Federation had a problem with their stuff. Now, I don't disagree that it is bigoted for the Federation to feel that way, but the Illyrians went in with their eyes open and said, we're going to join anyway, and we're just going to hide who we are. Like, and then they're upset that they're being persecuted. But, like, why would you want to join the bigot club if you know they're bigots? You know what I mean?
Why do we still get, like, people coming to America, like, you know, it's all sorts of different reasons. Refugees,
Yes, if they had framed this as the Illyrians were refugees, they had nowhere else to go, I think this would have worked better for me. But it was, they openly chose to side with the Federation and then got mad that the Federation had this rule that they knew about.
Well, you know that's what I mean? Like we don't see enough, and we haven't seen enough of these, like, these people to sort of see, like, what the day-to-day life is.
Yes. And like, I think it would have worked better for me if we'd known, like, oh, that's why. They had no choice, and they joined the Federation, and then the Federation was like this, and they're like, fuck, I guess we're stuck. But it felt like they deliberately said, we're going to join this place that says no Illyrians and just assume they're going to look the other way. It's similar to how we felt about the Maquis, where it's like, your situation's bad, but also seems pretty avoidable.
I mean, you're not wrong, and like, if they're going to do this and make it like an important part of the series, like, they should be I had the moment a couple of weeks ago of wondering, like, no, that was, never mind.
Okay.
That was a completely other point.
Okay. That's all right. But like, you are stuck here because you, and look, I'm not calling into question, like, your love for Mal. Of course not. Like, you came here because you love her and you wanted to be with her, but also now you're stuck here. Things are like this and they're getting worse. And like, that is a sympathetic story. And you are like, there is no question that, like, you got sort of trapped by all this.
But
the way the Illyrians are depicted here, it feels like, why did you walk into the no Illyrians allowed door? Like, that just seems, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, if they put a little work into making their situation seem more like yours, I would have felt that more strongly. You know what I mean?
I think you have a point. I also think, like, you know, it's the Federation. Like, why won't you let us in? You let everybody in. You guys love people. You got to let a Klingon in Starfleet. Like, can we talk at least?
Well, okay. Also, and I think this is kind of a cop out. I will say this up front, but I think what Enterprise was trying to do and failed spectacularly was to say, in the beginning, we were more like we are now, and we had to build bridges to get to the Federation that we all think is great.
Mm-hmm.
And the Klingon you're talking about won't happen for another 100 years or something. Like, it takes a while. And so early on, this is early days, the Federation's not as good as it will be later, and they got to get through this. And I don't mind seeing the steps it takes to get there. That's interesting to me.
Well, and I think, have, like, saying one of the things Gene was completely against, like, saying that, like, yeah, this is good, but we're still not perfect. Like, we have to keep, like, we yeah, have to keep getting better every day, you know?
He didn't want to show the steps to get there. He just wanted to assume everything was great from the get-go. And it's like, yeah. I appreciate that. I do. Like, for all the shit we have to say about Gene, and it's a lot. Like,
it is a lot.
I do
he
appreciate his... But I do appreciate his position of wanting to like, create a utopia. That's good. And but it's still interesting to find the cracks and to like explore them. Not to make a hero who's just bad, like Archer, but an episode like this where it's like, okay, the Federation says this, but we're not quite. And the thing is, in a science fiction setting, I get the genetic like being against genetic modification. I understand it. Like, it makes sense to me. Like, in real life, I don't know. Who knows? But because it would probably be a corporation thing and it probably would be evil. But here, it's...
Oh, yeah. No, the second, like, they start... The second they're like, we're going to introduce body mods. It's like, okay, well, like, you going to repo the genetic opera, my ass? Like...
Yeah.
What's the plan here?
I mean, you know, the whole thing where it's like companies are trying to patent specific genes and like, so you can make this change, but now it belongs to fucking Facebook or whatever, you know, like, ugh. But, oh, I just made myself a little sick.
Listen, man, like, it ain't, despite what I said earlier, it ain't getting better anytime soon.
No, I know, but whether it is fair or whatever, the fact is the Federation said, one of our core worlds went through this. We're real skittish about this. We don't want this. And the Illyrians said, yeah, we'll join anyway. We'll take our chances.
See, I do not like the idea that, like, the Illyrians who have been doing this for, like this is an old... For people who didn't listen to the other episode, like, they do genetic engineering to themselves to survive on these planets rather than, like, terraforming.
In my summary, I mentioned, like, I made a joke of Pike risking life and lung, and the idea is he couldn't breathe on the planet he went to, and he basically, like, threatened to, I'm just going to sit here until my artificial oxygen runs out, so you better let me talk to this lawyer. And
I love that so much.
It was good. And it was like that's what you're talking about. Like, they fix themselves so they can live on any planet, which is a cool science fiction idea, I think.
Yeah. The shot when he's walking like up to the building and it's like all these people wandering around and he's like leaning against the wall with like this big like mask on his face. People are sort of like, is that guy okay?
But
why'd you come here? Well, I kind of had to.
I don't understand why the Illyrians, like, plenty of worlds are still great and they're still allies, but they're not part of the Federation. Like,
and that's
like,
true.
Like, number one could be a, like Kira was, an Illyrian officer on loan to Starfleet, but not technically in Starfleet. I don't know. Like, I appreciate they wanted to use this to talk about this, and I just think they could have done it a little better.
And the other thing that I've been picking up, it's like clearly genetic engineering, like is a, like, people are pissed about that. Like, yeah. We've seen La'an find out and go, you lied, and you're, excuse me, let me just roll out an old quote here. You're a monster. Mm-hmm. Not like these the other monsters, but a different monster.
Yeah.
And like, when, what the hell's her name? The lawyer.
I put it in my summary because I did not remember it.
Yeah,
now I am not seeing it, and I'm vamping until I... Catul.
Female lawyer, getting lots of sex.
Yep. Catul is her last name.
Catul, yeah, okay. When Catul has April on the stand, and basically it's just like, okay, and you also have prejudice against genetic engineering, right? And she basically draws him out to like, yeah, they shouldn't be here.
Yeah, which I think it's a little disingenuous to paint that as like, I don't know. It just, and there's a point where she, a black woman, questioning this admiral, a black man, compares this persecution of genetic engineering to slavery, and I thought that was in poor taste. Like, mind you, I'm a white dude, and maybe I got no say saying this,
yeah,
but it did feel a little cheap, don't you think?
Sure. No, like, you're not wrong, but also I was like, I don't know. I don't know where to start with this one.
I just take the position that comparing your made-up sci-fi thing to a real thing that people went through might be in poor taste. That's all.
I mean, yeah. But also, I don't know. Don't make it subtle because people are stupid.
I guess. That was my big problem. At times, this felt like fucking Gene wrote it. Like, it was so unsubtle. And that was really my... But my real problem... Like, these are the issues that I have to counter what you said. But my actual bad thing is a whole other thing. That this... Like, otherwise, I would have just not agreed with this sort of... On the grounds of, like, its argument. But also, character-wise, I have some real problems with it. Which is my bad thing. Una... gets so little to do in this episode that's ostensibly about her. Like, this is all about the lawyer. And the lawyer's a great character, by the way. She's outstanding. Oh, yeah. Performer's great. Also, her costuming is, like, she's gorgeous.
Oh, and my God. When the first day, like, the dresses this woman wears, I'm just, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No. She's a beautiful woman, costumed well, great performer, like, well written. Like, I have no arguments against the lawyer, whatever, but she is one of those guest stars that steals the show. And, like, this is our Una focus episode after a full season of she's been in the background and she's done some things, but she hasn't really, like, had an episode the way Pike or Spock has. Like, this is number one. This is that mysterious character from the cage that we know nothing about. Let's get in her head. No, she's just going to move aside and let this lawyer steal the show. And it really, seeing her on the stand reminded me of Dax in those early episodes where there was that one episode where she was going to lose the symbiont and she basically just sat there waiting to die.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So, like, she's got a good speech in this. Her testimony was good. But, that's about half of one act. The rest of this, she's just a prop that everyone else uses to make these arguments. And it's like, come on, man. Like, where is Una?
Did you step up and like, well, she literally is like, put me on the stand. I want to talk. No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Look, I've got 50 pages of speeches prepared here. We'll be reading those.
Planned out thing on how this is going to land, and it's going to land perfectly.
And she's right. But also...
Because this poor prosecutor is way over her head.
I also like that Pike does the thing where he tracks down the best possible defense. That's great. But that means Una has effectively been rescued by her captain and this lawyer who turned out to be her childhood friend. Like,
yes.
Una has no friend. Active. Well, okay. She was her friend. They used
no, she
to...
no. That's not what I'm saying. Like, there is. Right. I was
oh,
just yeah, like,
no.
All
there's
right.
a there's a vibe. They hold hands a lot. You're not wrong.
It's like, oh, friends, really?
And I wonder what Una's proclivities are there. Like, in the storybook episode, she was straight up a lesbian. But like, here, I don't know, maybe. But you're not wrong. I got that vibe too.
Stranger World has been a real return to the, oh, everyone's just Pan in this show.
Look, that's my preference, but...
Yeah, man.
But also, it's one of those things where it'd be real easy to take that out in the for the foreign markets, too. You know, like...
Mm-hmm. I don't like.
Well, no. That's why I say for all of Disco's faults, when they did have queer characters, they mm-hmm. were queer all the time, and they mentioned yep. it a lot. And it was clumsy as fuck, but at least they were, like, they were out there. And you could trim 10 seconds and it wouldn't be there anymore, you know?
The only thing Hugh and Stamets' relationship is based on is two people who say I loved you to each other constantly.
Mm-hmm. But
we should brush our teeth together more often. I agree.
But like...
Because of the love we're in. Yes, of course.
I wish Una had something, you know?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
And I've seen, like I said, I've seen mm-hmm. through this season... And she just, like, this was her opportunity. This was the chance yeah. to say, here's what she's about. And, like, I still don't really feel like I feel like I know Ortegas better. This character they created new for this show. And
that's,
she hasn't had an episode
thinking
yet.
About that, too, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
just, like, I keep waiting for the Ortegas episode. We keep not getting it.
It's coming.
Yeah.
There's the one you've seen. You just forget it, I think.
Yeah. Well, I forget everything that's ever happened to me.
That's fine.
I love this episode, and I went into it fresh-faced with just the, like, this is my favorite episode, let's find out why.
Mm-hmm. Well, since I'm talking about Ortegas, I'm just going to play my quote here, which is,
yeah.
She and Mbenga are chilling in, what do they call it? It's not 10 Forward, obviously, but, like, the
no.
lounge, whatever,
the bar.
on the yeah. Enterprise. Yeah. And
mess Spock, hall?
Maybe it's the mess hall. I don't know, because it's kind of a bar.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Yeah, they're chilling there, and next table over, or, you know, a couple tables over, is Spock talking to the one of the Vulcan. He's not the prosecutor. He's not the main prosecutor, but there's, like, a tribunal or whatever, and he's one of
the
senior
guys.
He's
doing, like, he's doing support or something for this, like...
Yeah.
So,
in a military tribunal, you have several officers there. It's not just... And I think that's for protection, is so one officer can't have, like, a grudge against you. It's like there's a
sure.
few people there to make it fair, which is... That's fine.
Mm.
But anyway, Ortegas looks over and sort of dubs what she imagines them saying to each other, and it's this.
Mr. Spock, I do hope you understand why I have to throw your friend in jail simply for being who she is.
Of course, Mr. Pasalk. It is only logical. Shall we play a round of Kalto this weekend?
Yes, that would be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Which, of course, made me laugh.
This is so good.
I always love a character doing an imitation of another character. That
yep.
always cracks me up.
Well, and I love...
Go ahead.
Just Mbenga's just like, no. You don't know Vulcans as well as you think.
Oh, yeah. The next part, he's like, don't you see the body language? And she's like,
yeah.
what body language? And he's pointing out, like, they hate each other. Look at that. And,
yep.
like, it occurred to me, I might have this wrong, but I think this is right. Wasn't Mbenga, like, the Vulcan specialist? Wasn't he, like... In the actual original series, the couple of times he showed up, wasn't he the guy that Bones deferred to when he couldn't figure shit out about Spock? And he's like, Joe, you take over.
I think that's right. I'd have to double check because, like...
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that's like, he knows Vulcans. Like, I assume he's either served on Vulcan or with Vulcans. And, like,
yeah.
like he knows not just their physiology, but their culture. Mm. And so I love... That's one of the things I love about him. And it also sets him apart from Bones, who...
Yep.
doesn't know shit about them, and it's like
nope.
willfully ignorant. Green-blooded hobgoblins, I don't know.
your best friend's best friend is a Vulcan. Yeah, and I refuse to learn anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
I love Spock coming over just like, I apologize for that outburst.
Yeah, for the outburst. That was really good.
This is really embarrassing. God, I hate that fucking guy.
Mm-hmm. That was good. My good thing, so this is a very brief moment, but La'an's, so there's a whole thread, I didn't really get into this in my summary, but there's a whole thread of who blew the whistle, who,
yes.
like, pushed Una under the bus, and, like, turns out she did it, which is another problem I have with the episode, like...
Yeah, we can get to that in a second.
Yeah, but, they're still trying to figure out, and La'an thinks it's her, because she got mad for a minute, like, and we saw this in the episode, she's like... you're a, well, you mentioned it, like, you're a monster, and, like,
yeah,
and Lon's trying to figure out who did this. And she's like, Uhura, can you dig up the personal logs of this person and this person? And Uhura says, absolutely not. That's against the rules. And we're trying to save Una. Well, I don't care. It's against the rules. And like, Uhura's been not a cadet for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And taking a principled stand against her superior officer is like, and oh,
the person
you're
she refers
great.
To as her mentor, too. Like,
yeah. 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 Because remember, there was a whole little arc where she did all her apprenticeships in the different departments. And Lon is like, I don't respect you. You're just here because you have to be. And by the end of the episode, she's like, I guess you're all right, kid.
Well, I love that. I love that principled stance, you know, just like, no, I'm not doing this. Also, like, if I get you this illegally, like, it taints the evidence you're trying to get me, you're trying to get. Like,
this isn't
this
one of those
not...
times where the law is unjust. This law is here for a reason.
Yeah. Like, if we present this, the follow-up question is, how do we get it? And if you say illegally, they throw it out of court. Like, this is not actually helpful like you think it is.
Right. Yeah, and like Uhura being the one with the clear head there, but also again, she's only been an ensign for a couple of months.
Yes.
And the fact that she's willing to disobey a direct order from her superior because she thinks it's just, imagine like your first day on a job and you tell your boss no. Like
no.
Oh my God.
Like, that is completely against every part of my character.
Now, in the military, it's taken even more seriously than that. Like,
oh, yeah.
You have less free will in the military. So, like, the fact that she did, like, it's just, it's heroic is strong, but she's definitely leaning in that direction, you know?
Yeah.
Good job, Nyota. I'm glad I'm glad your head and your heart are in the right place. That's good.
Again, an amazing fucking character. God, I love her.
Yeah, and she deserves, you know, we've talked about this, but she deserves that. Like, she had so little to do, and now they're backfilling, like, no, this is what she's actually like, and that's good. As far as Una outing herself, though, it felt like, then what's the point of the episode? Like, why are we doing this trial if she turned herself in?
I mean, like, I was thinking about this a lot, because you can basically see her like go from like I can see her brain going from like, well, I'm in the closet to like I have to do this thing that's going to get me out of the closet and a couple of people are going to find out and Captain Pike knows and I don't know, this seems to be working out like I can see that leading to the like, well, what the fuck am I doing? This is the Federation, like this is Starfleet, like I shouldn't have to hide, you know? And that turning into a, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah, but then, again, that goes back to my earlier point of, like, if she had taken a more active role, if she's like, I'm going to out myself because of this crusade, then she just sort of sits there and waits for everyone else to fix it for her.
That's the thing, too. And if she had been honest with a single female lawyer about that, too, like, that goes a long way to... Like, this is basically what fixes their relationship, because she spends the entire episode pissed off at Una.
Yeah. Which, again, like, she thinks she abandoned her when they were, like, eight. Like,
yeah.
You really? Really? Come on.
I don't know. There's a couple of things that happened to me when I was eight that I'm still mad about.
Yeah, but her parents made a decision, and she's basically blaming her for the actions of her parents, and that's that's shitty. Come on.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, I completely forgot what my point was.
Una outing herself and...
Oh, like, yeah. Like, if we, you know, spend some more time with that, and if this feels more intentional, like, no, I'm going to get this out here. I am a highly decorated officer. Like, I am proving to you that, like, I have a place here, and you have given me a place here. Nothing has changed except you know about this.
I think if they had given the lawyers stuff to Una... If she had said, I'm going to make this a civil rights case and I'm going to make this a precedent setting, like one way or another, either I'm going to like go out in a blaze of glory or I'm going to like change things for people like me and make them better. Like if she'd taken the active role, I think that would have made this episode so much better.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And again, I love that lawyer. I love like the performer. I love the writing. Like it was all good, but. I think it really takes, she took everything away from Una that should have been hers.
Yeah.
So she's recounting all the stuff that happened when she was a kid and when people found out about some Illyrians, and they called them augment, which is a thing that they do. And one of the slurs they had was Mahdi.
Oof. It's not
really
very good.
Mahdi? Mahdi?
Yeah. Listen.
Mm-hmm.
Making up fictional slurs it always sounds stupid. It's like fictional curse words, you know?
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't know. Like, I also think that you probably vibe with this more because it's very similar to the X-Men. Like,
oh, yeah.
The genetically modified thing is real close to being a mutant, and I think
another thing that I spend a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, exactly. And Marvel spent 50 plus years making you think mutant equals any marginalized group whatsoever. So I get that.
What that marginalized group is tends to shift, but
Well, and that's because the marginalized group that we are actively going after at any given time has changed since the X-Men debuted. So I get that, but you know. Also, there's a point during her testimony where she's praising the diversity of the Federation, and the camera pans by three Earth humans and a half-human Vulcan. Like, really? Diversity, huh?
See, when that was happening, I was looking at the bas relief in the background, which had a bunch of carved various Federation races on it, wearing cowls.
I missed that, but apparently, like, Memory Alpha mentioned it, and apparently there's a Cation in there, and like some...
Yep.
Well, it's kind of cool. But yeah, she's talking about diversity and is like, look at all these humans and this guy who's basically a human with 20 ears. And like, okay, visually, what you're looking at is different genders and different ethnicities. And that's good. But in world, there's very little diversity there. let's see what else. I also thought that and again, you said it needed to not be subtle, and I appreciate that. Mm. But like, the music goes positively sinister when the Vulcan guy is questioning why Pike covered this up for 4 months. When, if you just think about the guy in his position, these are the rules, whether they're fair or not, these are the rules. Mm-hmm. And this guy lied for 4 months. He just wants to know why. And the music has to come in and say, no, it's evil. I was like, not really. It might be an evil policy. That is debatable. But the fact is, we're in a court and he's trying to determine who did something wrong, and he just wants to know. Like, there's no agenda there beyond that. And they're like, no, he's going to destroy the well. Like, what? What? I don't know why I went to that. Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
I will destroy the well.
I mean, this is poisoning the reservoir turned into...
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't...
No, again, like... That we spend all this time, looking, like, the guy doesn't talk until he rolls out this, this argument at the end.
They present him like the final boss. Like, he hasn't spoken yet, and when he does, it's all gonna come crumbling down.
Well, and the thing I like is the idea, like, he basically introduces the idea that this is, like, a conspiracy within the Enterprise.
And the thing is, he's right. It is. That doesn't mean it's a, like, you know, it turns out it's a conspiracy against an unjust law, and that's good.
Yeah.
But, like, but it is literally, if anyone other than Una knows about it and is covering it up, that makes it a conspiracy.
Well, and that's the thing I am sort of realizing about this episode, and I still think it's like, this is still my favorite. I want to be very clear.
And I love that this speaks to you, and I don't want to in any way, like, convince you that it shouldn't. Like, I love that.
But what I want is more of it, like more of Una, more of this guy. Like, what's this guy's deal? Why is he like this? Like,
yeah,
more of this.
Yeah, no, I don't think this is a bad idea for an episode. I think they could have done it better. That's all.
Yeah. I still stand by it, though.
Okay, good.
And I'm sorry you were bored, but like, goddamn.
I mean, that happens. Look. We've done 900 plus Star Treks. They're not all going to land. It's fine.
Just all the dramatic speechifying, and I'm just sitting here watching it on my computer just going, yes, absolutely. Fuck these guys. How dare you? The other thing that annoys me is that, like, you know, enjoy stuff like this while you can, because Paramount is owned by a huge fucking Trump supporter.
Yeah, and Paramount might be buying Warner Bros. Like,
that's almost definitely going to happen. So, like,
yeah, it's terrible.
Cut to season 5, where it's just like all the bridge members standing around going, "You know who was really great was President Trump, and isn't it awesome that he's still president of the Federation now? This is great."
I mean, Lorca was singing the praises of Elon Musk.
Yep, that was bad too. Fucking hated that.
But in fairness, that was Jason Isaacs ad-libbing, and he has recently said, "Ugh, I wish I hadn't done that. That guy sucks."
Yep. Like, no, I appreciate that.
At the time, he wanted a free Tesla. And then
that one, I stand by the early indicator that this man is from the Mirror Universe.
Yes. I should also mention that the British panel game show, Would I Lie to You, recently had Jason Isaacs. And first of all, he was goddamn fantastic.
I haven't seen him in anything outside of, like, you know.
Oh, my God. He's so good.
No, that's awesome.
You should see The Death of Stalin. I know it doesn't sound like something you'd be interested in, but it is.
I have seen The Death of Stalin.
Oh, have you?
I just probably didn't recognize that he was in it.
He stole the fucking movie.
You know what? I did. He's the fucking the guy they bring in like later in the movie, right? Like,
yes. And he completely steals the show from all the other
great
performers. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's a great fucking movie.
Yes. Okay. I knew you would think that if you'd seen it, but I knew it would also be a tough sell if you hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's Armando Iannucci, the guy who did Veep and Thick of It and Avenue 5. Like, he made that.
No, my mom was in town last week, and I was just like, "Should we watch Death of Stalin? I bet she'd like it."
Oh, did you just watch it?
No, I watched it a couple of years ago. We ended up watching something else. But
okay, very well. But yeah, that's Jason Isaacs stealing the goddamn show, and he's been in a lot of stuff. He played fucking Cary Grant in something not very long ago, and I didn't think he could pull it off, and Jesus, he was good.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, but anyway, on What I Like to You, he actually talks about Star Trek a bit, which is pretty good, but also he rolls with these really, like, fast on their feet comedians, and if you watched that and you didn't know him from anything else, you're like, "Shit, is this guy a comedian? He's really funny."
Yep. Like, no, that's awesome. I loved seeing that kind of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else about this episode?
Let me just check my notes here. There's that squirrel from Green Lantern.
Yeah, I saw that. I wasn't sure why that was there.
Someone said Chip, and I was like, "Did you say Chip?"
I think they said ship, which is a word that comes up in literally every episode of Star Trek on a ship.
And yet, somehow, I was just like, "Oh, yeah, like Chip, the squirrel from Green Lantern. Let me just post this in here. Al knows who I'm talking about."
I mean, I did. Mm-hmm. But also, I've always, in my head, pronounced it Chip, because there's no vowel in there. Yeah.
That might be it. Yeah.
All right. Well, then, I suppose that's all for this time. Oh, God. Next time, the episode is, well, if you're American, it's tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. If you're Canadian, it's tomorrow, tomorrow,
and tomorrow. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Yes. Amanda and I, because she does the bumpers for the show, we're like, okay, please don't read this as Canadian as possible. You can do it a bit Canadian, but the people need to know what the hell you're saying.
Is there in truth no beauty, eh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, at Astra Peraspera?
Oh, golly, the world is hollow and I have touched the sky, don't you know?
This unfortunately is a Laan and Kirk episode.
Oh no.
It gets worse from there. But we'll talk about that next week.
Yep.
The website, as ever, postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail.com. The Patreon, patreon.com/Algar. As little as a buck a month, you get a bunch of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See ya, folks.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2026. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.